And the sun will come for us all.
Hey, Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I am so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc. Just PODC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time, unless like
almost.
I'm on vacation or like I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals, G-A-L-S, at reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. And if you don't want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay. Thanks.
Rude.
Hello. I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
And today we're bringing you a joint. What are we? Suspicious jailhouse deaths? Is that right? Did I get that right? All right. Yeah. But before we get started, Samantha, what are we not drinking?
Actually, today none of us are drinking. It is a little early on a Sunday, but I am not drinking alcohol, although at the end of this episode, I might regret that. We'll see. I am drinking my cold brew mix that I always do. I got the idea from Montana to do cold brew ice cubes. So I got a little bit of those, threw in some sugar-free sweetener and cold brew and milk. But what about you guys?
I have water. Keeping it classy.
I have Sprite.
Kelsey was the fanciest.
Yeah. I thought about adding vodka, but nah. Just plain Sprite.
You might also regret not doing that by the end of this.
I know, right?
Yeah, this one is definitely, obviously, I mean, based on the subject matter, it's going to be more serious. And for lack of a better word on my head, I feel like it's very disheartening.
Yes.
And unfortunate, but yeah, at your own risk. But
yeah,
drink whatever you need to.
Yeah, but the reality of it is, like, we're not going to go into super details about how fucked up the prison system is, but
we don't have that kind of time.
They just don't get, they don't get the basic human necessities and quality that is required to be a human, you know? So do with that what you will. Maybe don't have privatized prisons. That's all I'm saying.
Well, and on that note, I believe I'm going first. So Montana, are you ready?
As ready as I think I could be.
That's fair. And I will tell you, this is, I believe this is the most recent case that I have covered to this point. This occurred in 2023. So last year.
Holy shit. Mine's a real recent one too. And it happened in 2023.
Oh, okay. Unless you got the state wrong, it shouldn't be the same.
No, I didn't get the state wrong.
Okay. So my case is going to be covering the suspicious, and honestly, it's not really suspicious. We know what happened, but death of Anthony Tony Mitchell, who died January 26, 2023 of hypothermia in the Walker County Jail in Alabama after being held in their custody for just 2 weeks.
What?
Yeah.
How do you get hypothermia?
High level at right out the gate. It's not good. And it's recent. Okay. That's why I picked it, because it just goes to show that this is still a problem, because this happened last year.
Ooh, I can already feel the rage within my chest.
Yeah. It gets worse. So, because, I mean, there's no right way for this to happen. It should never happen, period, to another human being, regardless of what they're guilty of. But let's get into it. Anthony Mitchell was just 33 at the time of his death. He was originally taken to the jail after his family called for a welfare check on January 12th, 2023. Tony's cousin had called in the request, stating they were worried because Tony seemed to be having a mental breakdown and looked malnourished. The cousin even suggested sending an ambulance to pick him up. When the sheriff's deputies arrived, reports said that Tony was still in a, quote, delusional state, brandished and fired a handgun before running into the woods behind his house. He was arrested and taken to the Walker County Jail, where the complaint alleges he was held for the next 14 days in an isolation cell intended for temporary holding during booking, not for housing detainees. The suit says that the cell lacked a bed and other furnishings. Mr. Mitchell was left to lie naked on a bare cement floor with a drain that could be used as a toilet. Based on surveillance footage provided to Mr. Mitchell's family by a correctional officer who was then fired when the sheriff learned she had shared the footage, the complaint alleges that Mr. Mitchell was dragged out of the cell on January 15th and tased. He lost the dentures that he needed to chew his food, and they were not returned to him. The suit alleges that Mr. Mitchell, quote, likely was placed in a restraint chair in the jail's kitchen walk-in freezer or similar frigid environment and left there for hours, end quote. This is all taken directly from the website that I found this on, and it will be in the show notes. About an hour after the jail kitchen opened at 3 a.m. on January 26th, the complaint says that surveillance footage shows Mr. Mitchell lying naked and motionless among piles of trash on the floor of the holding cell. While officers are seen clowning and laughing outside of the door, the suit alleges, a nurse spends a couple of minutes with Mr. Mitchell but appears to provide no medical treatment. An officer turns out the light and closes the door. At around 6 a.m., the video shows officers entering the cell with a sleeping mat and sweeping around Mr. Mitchell to remove trash from the cell as multiple people come by to look into the cell, according to the complaint. No one called an ambulance or provided emergency treatment, according to the suit. Instead, the complaint says, quote, while Tony languished naked and dying of hypothermia in the early morning hours of January 26th and his chances for survival trickled away, numerous corrections officers and medical staff wandered over to his open cell door to spectate and be entertained by his condition, end quote. Again, that's opinions, not mine. This is straight from the article.
But I'm sorry, it's easy to believe that if these people are just so fucking callous to put a man who is having a mental breakdown into, first off, prison. In any case, he shouldn't have been there. And then to put him in a freezer? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Now, this is just a description of the video, so I haven't even gotten into their response or their version of events.
God, this makes me sick.
At about 8:30 a.m., the suit says the video shows Mr. Mitchell being taken out of the cell in a wheelchair. After he falls out of the chair, officers put him back and shackle his feet while he makes what the complaint calls, quote, slow, seemingly spasmodic movements, end quote. Officers are then seen dragging Mr. Mitchell back into the cell while a female detainee is processed in the booking area. Sometime later, the suit alleges, officers carried Mr. Mitchell's out to a waiting SUV. The Walker County Sheriff's Office told CBS 42 that Mr. Mitchell was, quote, alert and conscious, end quote, when he left the jail, but surveillance video obtained by CBS 42 shows that Mr. Mitchell's body is limp and he appears to be unconscious as officers carry him outside, put him down on the cement while they open the car door, and then place him in the back seat of the vehicle. When Mr. Mitchell arrived at Walker Baptist Hospital at 9:23 a.m., his internal body temperature was 72 degrees Fahrenheit. He had no pulse and was taking only 2 to 4 breaths per minute, according to the suit. So no pulse in this situation. They say that because it was so low, they basically couldn't read it. Doctors tried for 3 hours to resuscitate him before he was declared dead at 1:15 p.m. The emergency room doctor wrote that the cause of death was hypothermia, but noted that the cause of his hypothermia was unclear. quote, it's difficult to understand a rectal temperature of 72 degrees Fahrenheit or 72 Fahrenheit, 22 centigrade. So I don't know if that's like another measurement.
No, that sound, the conversion sounds about right for Celsius to Fahrenheit.
Well, it doesn't say Celsius. That's why it threw me off. It was a weird way to say that. So I don't know.
It's just another word for Celsius. It literally says another word for Celsius.
Well, then why not just say Celsius? You want to get fancy.
Anyway, it's difficult to understand a rectal temperature of 72 degrees Fahrenheit or 22 degrees Celsius while someone is incarcerated in jail, the doctor wrote. And that was all from EJI.org. According to ABC3340.com, quote, internal jail surveillance video surfaced as first reported by ABC 3340 News, showing Mitchell being carried out of the Walker County Jail and loaded into a patrol vehicle. He appeared unconscious. More videos and images revealed scenes of Mitchell inside the jail, which I've already described. Some of the images showed him with no clothes on. Others showed him being tased and dragged across the jail floor. Another article said, but when Kelly leaked cell phone video of inmate Anthony Mitchell being carried out of the jail, Kelly is the officer that was fired, I believe. Yeah, that's the next sentence. Cell phone video of inmate Anthony Mitchell being carried out of the jail to be taken to the hospital. She was fired. Kelly also filed a wrongful termination lawsuit alleging she was retaliated against. She has recently been promoted to acting supervisor at the jail. So fired, then promoted. Mixed messages.
Yeah. The only reason they fired her was because they didn't have, she leaked it before they had time to fucking delete that shit.
Probably, yeah. And I don't know if these were her personal, like if she took these videos herself because she saw what was going on and knew it was wrong. I really don't know. I might have some more information. I can't remember. Oh yeah. I think some of it was on her cell phone and some of it was other video. In court filings, Kelly said she was concerned when she learned Mitchell had died and at the urging of a lieutenant was told to search jail video to see what happened. She said she discovered video depicting Mitchell in an obvious state of unconsciousness near death. Kelly recorded the video on her cell phone. Okay, so it was both. She recorded the video with her cell phone to then be able to release it. Kelly explained the video weighed heavy on her heart. She said public information officer TJ Armstrong was providing false statements to the media to hide the facts. Kelly alleges when the video circulated on social media, her cell phone was taken by an investigator. On February 10th, a deputy delivered a termination of employment letter. According to an article by threadbylee.com, on March 10th, 2023, the sheriff's office is shown in a pretty awful light. Quote, in comments made on a post, these people really need to hire PR people when it comes to this stuff. In comments made on a post from February 3rd, the law enforcement agency's official page addressed members of the public criticizing the agency over its treatment of Anthony Tony Mitchell, a man who died in their custody last month. Quote, stop being ignorant with no facts, one of the sheriff's office comments said. A member of the public, Chance Armstrong, quickly replied to the agency. So you block comment sections for weeks, then up and call everyone ignorant at 1 a.m.? The agency then replied to Armstrong, quote, we want people to live and thrive. Why didn't his family get him help for years if they felt he was with mental illness until they could profit from it? The sheriff's office said.
They try to.
Let's deflect and not talk about what we did. Let's talk about the family and put all of this on them.
That's gaslighting.
Yeah.
We didn't do anything wrong. It was all on the family. They should have called an ambulance, blah, blah, blah. Well, they called you to help get help.
A wellness check.
To help him. And instead of getting him help, you arrested him, stripped him naked, and caused him to die of hypothermia. Y'all did this.
Since then, dozens of individuals have pushed back on the agency, criticizing the sheriff's office for the tone and content of its comments. Quote, Walker County Sheriff's Office, if you don't want to read the criticism, get a real job, one commenter replied. Thread reached out to Miranda Mitchell Gutzmer, Mitchell's sister, about the comments made by the sheriff's office. She said she was in shock when she read the posts. Quote, I was in shock when I read the cruel comments the WCSO posted to their Facebook account. A government organization calling citizens ignorant is completely unprofessional and unacceptable. Their statement that every lawyer and investigator have the videos is factually inaccurate. Our attorney, John Goldfarb, requested all video footage to be provided in a format for expert review, and that request has yet to be fulfilled. The allegation that my family didn't get my brother help for years and attempting to shift blame to my family is callous and incorrect. Myself and others in my family had offered my brother help and resources for his addiction. He unfortunately did not accept the help. When my cousin Steve made the emergency call for a welfare check, that was our family's last hope for getting him help. And lastly, to say we were attempting to profit off the death of my brother is disgusting. My family will never profit because we have suffered the ultimate loss, Tony's life. We hope to gain answers to what happened those 2 weeks he was held at WCSO jail, and we hope that those who are involved with my brother's mistreatment are held accountable. End quote.
And this was Walker County? Mm-hmm. Are you serious? Well, I mean, it's not surprising, but like where it's at, but it's just like, what?
How are you going to blame the family for his death when if he died of hypothermia, which that is the cause of death, and they were in your care? How are you blaming the family for that? That was not based on drug overdose, which would then you could then maybe point to him and that it was his fault. No, this is hypothermia. He was in your care. There's no reason whatsoever that this should be a cause of death in your care.
And in any case, if you have a prisoner, if you have somebody who is under arrest, is in your care or whatever, mental health breakdown aside, like that should have been the first sign to take him to a hospital. But if he is on drugs, he also needs to be taken to a hospital. You don't know if he's going to detox. You don't know what is going to happen. You need to get him care before you can do anything with him. So why didn't you do that?
Why was the first, I guess their stance is, and I'll get into it, but to some extent, they've been kind of not super forthcoming. I guess their thing is, you know, he brandished a weapon and he threatened our officers. Well, yeah, to be perfectly honest, if he's on drugs, I'm not surprised by much of anything that he may do. Again, is that normally how you handle somebody who might be detoxing from drugs? You normally stick them in an isolation cell and then just lock them in there and don't check on them for hours on end? Is that typically how we handle that? Because if so, we definitely need to revisit our protocol.
Well, Sam, they don't even have to have a weapon anymore. They could be just a kid carrying a violin or something. You know, it doesn't matter anymore.
Just the whole thing. Anyway.
Yeah, they don't need an excuse to do that because at the end of the day, they're not going to be held responsible. That's kind of what's happening.
This is a little off topic. Well, not really. Are you going to talk about like how cold it has to be to get hypothermia and stuff? Only because when you first started talking about it, it made me think about it and I already Googled it. So I just didn't know if you had that in there or not.
I don't have the exact information. So if you want to share, you can. Do you have it pulled up? It'll give me a chance to take a sip.
Yeah, take your time. So hypothermia, it says hypothermia can occur when you are exposed to cold air, water, wind, or rain. Your body temperature can drop to a low level at temperatures of 50 degrees. Then I Googled how long does it take for hypothermia to kill you? Because I thought like 50 degrees isn't that cold, but I guess like over a prolonged period, you know. So it says 40 to 50 degrees can cause death in 1 to 3 hours. 32 to 40 degrees, and this is Fahrenheit, by the way, degrees can cause death in 30 to 90 minutes. And then if it's 32, so freezing for us Americans or below, it can cause death in as little as 15 minutes, 15 to 45 minutes. I don't know. I just think that's bonkers. Because I thought to myself, how is it that cold in a holding cell that would cause hypothermia? But again, I didn't realize that it can be caused by degree, like 50 degree weather.
Well, so as human beings, we generate our own heat. So mm-hmm. we generate more heat to bring up the temperature so that it's at a level that we can handle. So we may shake, we may shiver. Those are ways of generating heat. But that also uses up calories. And if he's not eating this whole time and he's not being given any clothing to help give insulation for that body heat is escaping with nothing to stop it, nothing to keep him warm. So if your external temperature is only 50 degrees, that makes sense because we're like 98 degrees or hotter. So if our environment is almost half of that, that's not really surprising because we have nothing to retain our own body heat. And that's what hypothermia really is your body heat goes down too low and then your body starts shutting down essentially.
And if he's strapped to a chair, he can't even ball up and get any type of like reserved body heat. And if you, I don't know, if you put him in a freezer, that might do it.
Now, it didn't say that the freezer was on or that it was functioning. I don't know if it was like used as a freezer, if it was more like storage that was a sealed environment. Either way, it was cold.
I will say, as somebody who is...
This was also January, by the way, end of January in Alabama. That's during a cold area, a cold time. The coldest is typically in February anyway. So it was cold outside, and I highly doubt this place was heated, if nothing else.
As somebody who has spent a couple of nights in an Alabama jail in the winter, it is cold. It is very cold. That's why they give you a big jumpsuit. So, you know.
In theory. Sometimes.
In theory.
So, from that same website, these comments are striking in comparison to a letter issued by an attorney for the WCSO on February 16th, 2023. The letter on behalf of the WCSO offers condolences to the family of Mr. Mitchell and asks for the community's support and patience. It feels like an absolute slap in the face now. Statement issued to TRED by Miranda Mitchell Gutzmer. So that was also from his sister. The mother of Anthony Tony Mitchell, a Walker County man who died in police custody in January, filed a federal lawsuit against multiple jail officials, including Sheriff Nick Smith, alleging that authorities deprived the man of his constitutional rights by leaving him in the jail's walk-in freezer or similar frigid environment for hours, in which we've already determined, thank you, Kelsey, it didn't take hours for somebody. It doesn't take hours for somebody to die in those environments. Quote, this is one of the most appalling cases of jail abuse the country has seen. The 37-page federal lawsuit begins. On the night of January 25th to January 26, 2023, Anthony Don Mitchell, Tony, froze to death while incarcerated at the Walker County Jail, end quote. The case, lawyers for the family wrote in the complaint, raises an appalling question. How does a man literally freeze to death while incarcerated in a modern, climate-controlled jail in the custody and care of corrections officers, end quote. And that basically sums it up. How does this even happen? Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether it happened or not, how does it happen? How is that even possible? We know it happened. We have all the, there is no real question here. The question is, how did it happen? The suit alleges that Mitchell was, quote, likely placed in a restraint chair in the jail kitchen's walk-in freezer, similar frigid environment, and left there for hours. So one thing is similar on all of the different reports that have been made. He was locked in a restraint chair, and he was left in a room for hours without any type of care or consideration or somebody checking in on him to see if he was okay. Walker County officials have denied the allegations included in the lawsuit, but have largely avoided public comments on this case until the late night comments made this week, which I had already gone through. And there's a reason why almost all of this is from websites. I am not interjecting my opinion here. These are things that are reported and readily available on the internet. So don't come at me, because
I'll interject my opinion.
This is all from the sites and from news reporting agencies. So
I think it's real sick and disgusting if it's true that so many of those officials just walked by this man actively dying for entertainment. Like, how do you sleep at night? How do you sleep at night?
You look at these people as other. You don't see them as human beings. And that's a problem. You should not be in that position of power if you cannot treat them as human beings, period.
And he should have never been in jail to begin with. No. It's so infuriating.
So according to CBS42.com, in June of 2023, there was an attempt to delay proceedings by filing a motion to halt depositions in some of the court proceedings pending an outcome of the state and federal investigations. Some sources said it was an attempt to delay indefinitely. But the motion was denied by Judge Anne Marie Carney Axon. Quote, and at the hearing, plaintiff's counsel stated without disagreement from defense counsel that depositions would not take place until several months from now at the earliest, Axon wrote in her order. Accordingly, at this point, it would be premature to rule on whether requiring the individual defendants to sit for depositions would compel an adverse judgment against them, end quote. With the latest order, the case continues to move forward. So that judge was like, no, nice try. We're not doing that. Which, for once, I was happy to hear that was the response. Like, no, we're not entertaining that. We're going to keep going. So per an article in ABC3340.com on February 27th, 2024, the autopsy was complete, but results were not being released as it was still an ongoing investigation. Then on CBS42.com on February 29th, updated March 1st, 2024, the cause of death was released as determined by the Walker County Coroner's report to be a homicide caused by medical neglect. According to the report, Mitchell had died due to hypothermia and sepsis that had resulted from, quote, infected injuries during drug incarceration and medical neglect, end quote. According to the article, quote, Mitchell was arrested on January 12, 2023 after firing a gun at deputies during a welfare check, where he ran into the woods and was allegedly having a mental health episode. He was later arrested and charged with attempted murder. In a statement issued after Mitchell's death, the Walker County Sheriff's Office said he was provided a, quote, routine medical check, end quote, later being determined that Mitchell needed to be taken to a hospital for further evaluation, and that he was alert and conscious when he left the Walker County Jail. The following month, Mitchell's family filed a lawsuit against the Sheriff's Office alleging he froze to death in the jail. A video shared by the family's lawyers shows Mitchell sliding out of the wheelchair he had been placed in and then being pulled back by two deputies. So I don't see why they're even trying to pretend that he was alert and conscious, because they have a video showing he wasn't. So you can say what you want, but there's evidence to prove otherwise. So I don't really see why we're having this argument.
I find that it's a homicide due to medical neglect. No, they caused the medical situation.
No, I agree.
If you phrase it that way, it means that if they do end up getting charged with anything, it's going to be like manslaughter due to medical neglect, instead of, which is going to be like 5 years maybe, and they'll instead probably get off on appeals, instead of murder, which it is. And it's first degree murder, because it takes a lot of planning to strap a man to a chair and put him in a freezer.
It takes a lot of time for him to die from that treatment. So you had a lot of opportunities to take action and save this person, because he's a person, this person's life. But instead, you chose to do other things.
And watch him suffer.
So in April 2023, lawyers for the WCSO said that Mitchell was tased while in custody, handcuffed and dragged with a stun gun prong still in him on January 15th. Mitchell had been dragged because he was combative and refused to walk, their response stated.
That's not combative.
So we're going to drag him with the stun gun prongs? Okay, sure.
But that's not being
That's obviously
combative.
The only way we can handle this. I mean,
it's submissive. It's passive.
Well, no, they're saying he was refusing to walk. So that made him combative, because he was refusing to go with them.
Their response was
to drag him.
Do they know what a dictionary is?
No.
Can you look
up
what combative means? Like, seriously, holy shit.
Well, I mean, I think technically combative is just not complying, in their opinion.
Well, the dictionary says that combative is ready or eager to fight. If he is not complying,
that would be non-compliant.
Non-compliant, but let's see with synonyms for that. Oh, defiant.
I'm doing an English lesson.
No. Defiant, insubordinate, resistant. Those are words that should be used, in my opinion, for what you described. Not.
Yeah, but that doesn't sound as good of a reason to do.
It sounds better for them if they phrase it. And it pisses me off when they write and say things like this, because it's little buzzwords like that that make it seem like their behavior was okay and it was justified. When in reality, most of us are learning more about media literacy, and the way that you phrase things make them seem like something that they're not. So they get like the public on their side, because they're like, oh, they were just doing their job. When in reality, no, you weren't. You were torturing a man who couldn't fight back. Sorry, tangent.
Most recently, as of March of this year, USAtoday.com reported that when Tony was arrested, his face was covered in a black substance, almost as if his face had been spray painted black. When the cousin asked about his face, the officer stated, quote, because he was planning to enter a portal to hell located inside of his house, end quote, and apparently also told them, quote, we're going to detox him and then we'll see how much of his brain is left, or words to that effect.
Yeah, dehumanization.
I mean, we'll see how much of his brain is left. That's just okay. And also, according to the amended complaint, during the night of January 25th to January 26th, corrections officers intentionally caused extremely cold air to blow through the roof vents into his cell using the jail's climate control system. So this is, well, we didn't put him in a freezer or refrigerator. We just intentionally blew cold air into his cell because we had the ability to do that. Also, why do we have the ability to do that? What's the possible reason for that? Anyway, the outside temperature that night was in the low 30s, the suit claims. So if it was simply outside air blowing into the cells, that air was frigid, the attorney wrote. It might as well have been a freezer if it was in the low 30s. Quote, BK5, referred to by some long-term correction staff and inmates as the freezer, because of the ability of correction staff to subject inmates to frigid temperatures there, would have been the coldest cell in the booking area, the suit reads. Inmates housed there report being able to see their breath because it was so cold and that their digits would actually turn numb. End quote. Now, as of the date that I wrote this, which was May 28th, and I forgot to check before we started recording, this case is still pending investigation, so there hasn't been an actual ruling on this case, but we will definitely keep an eye and let you guys know if there are any updates. But I just really don't understand why this is a complicated case, to be perfectly honest. There's too much evidence. I mean, there's video evidence, but okay.
What's bothering me too in this situation is, like, you know, when you go and you stay at like a hotel room or whatever, and you're not allowed to adjust the thermostat within like 10 degrees of a preset level. Why?
Yep.
Why are you allowed to do that in a jail?
What would be the purpose outside of torture?
Yeah, exactly.
Inhumane treatment. I mean, why would that be necessary or even warranted or allowed?
No, no, but it's fine because whatever. Well, good job, I think.
Yeah, so I liked their ability to turn it into something to do with satanic situations because he was trying to open a portal to hell outside. Okay,
We're never going to get past satanic panic.
Apparently not.
Any excuse, especially in the Bible Belt of the United States, if you can bring some kind of demonic, witchy, spooky aspect to it, you're subhuman. It's a dehumanization of people. People with mental illnesses, people with anything.
Also, let's just say, okay, he's completely high on drugs, and that's why his family couldn't get a hold of him. That's why he was malnourished. Whatever. That was what was going on. Okay, fine. He's still a human being. He's a human being with definite needs for help, not jail time. And if he's hopped up on drugs, he would be defiant. He would be difficult at that moment because he's not in his right mind. So if anything, he would be more insane than a danger.
Yeah.
So, and also there were multiple people there. So it's not like, I mean, I know he had a gun and maybe he shot it at them, but you're telling me they had no other response than to have a stun gun. Obviously, he wasn't holding the gun anymore. So now you're going to drag him. I feel like there were other options, a lot of them that weren't.
There were definitely
done.
Other options. One of them could be, I don't know, having better gun control so that people who do need help and mental breakdowns and things like that can't access guns. But you know what? That might be asking for too much.
We're not even required to have pistol permits in Alabama anymore.
Yeah, I know. It's sick. Well, good job. I'm pissed, and I hope you're ready to get even angrier.
Sure, why not? We picked this subject matter, by the way, like months ago, and we've been pushing it down the line.
We've been delaying it.
Yeah. So
for reasons.
But it's a topic that needs to be talked about. So I'm ready.
So today I'm going to tell you about Dexter Wade. And at some point, you're probably going to recognize this topic. But I'm talking about it in a different way than you've probably heard about it. So it might take you a while. So just buckle up. Dexter Wade was the middle child of three to single mother Betterson Wade. He grew up in Jackson, Mississippi, and was a sweet little boy, according to his mother. He was sharp with computers, a leader among classmates, a lover of nice clothes, a dreamer who hoped to one day run his own business refurbishing old cars. Him and Paul would have been friends.
For sure. Maybe would have given him some pointers on the finer dressing part, but
yeah, probably. I mean, Paul could.
Dude, you can wear things outside of cargo shorts.
Yeah, and maybe get some new shoes if the soles are coming off. That's all I'm saying, Paul.
Maybe.
In his teens, things took a turn for the worse, though. Dexter began hanging out with older men who would steal cars, and they did copious amounts of drugs. Betterston worked at nights and wasn't always around to help keep him out of trouble. You know, she was doing her best with three kids. As a young man, Dexter found love with his girlfriend, Candace Thomas, and the couple had two beautiful daughters together. Though their relationship did eventually end, Dexter's daughters were a bright spot in his life. Dexter, however, seemed to be struggling. Later, he was arrested and served time in prison for two separate crimes, attempted auto theft and armed robbery. While he served time, his daughters came to see him, and after his release in 2017, him and Candace remained friends, and he seemed to be a loving, devoted father to his two girls. A quote from NBC News, quote, from Candace, quote, he was sweet and loving, especially when it came to the kids. But prison had clearly damaged him. You could look in his eyes and see he wasn't the same person. I could tell he was struggling mentally. His mother noticed him struggling as well, and shortly after this, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. This seemed to make a world of difference for him. He was now being treated for these diagnoses, and it helped decrease his illegal drug intake. He was also more of a homebody. He would stay in cleaning or taking care of yard work, and on hot days, he would give out homemade ice pops to the kids in their neighborhood. He handed out food. Yeah. He handed out food to the unhoused and would sometimes sell soda and chips in the neighborhood for extra cash. He never really left his home for more than a couple of days, and if he did, he made sure to call his mother almost every day. Betterston said that he never showed signs of wanting to hurt himself. Quote, he didn't seem like he was in a bad place, but I don't know what happened that particular day. On March 5th, Betterston, a retired Nissan line technician who worked part-time as a home help aide, returned home and found one of her windows broken. She and Dexter argued about it, and around 7:30 p.m., he left with a friend. This was the last time Betterston spoke with Dexter. Knowing it was unusual not to hear from her son for more than a couple of days, Betterston struggled with the idea of calling the police to file a missing persons report. And she had a good reason to not want to get them involved. Outside of the fact that he is also, a mentally unwell, but getting treated black man who had been arrested before. But there's another reason. In 2019, Betterston's 62-year-old brother, George Robinson, was murdered after Jackson law enforcement officers dragged him from his car and slammed him to the ground. So I looked into that case, too, because I was like, what the actual F? George had recently had a stroke. And thankfully, at the time that this occurred, he was actually on the mend. He had just been released from the hospital. And he was supposed to be attending a cookout, like a celebratory cookout that day. And he had stopped off at the store. At that same time, law enforcement were in that area in the neighborhood because they were searching for a suspect in a murder case of a pastor. George wasn't even the suspect. They were looking for somebody else. And while in the neighborhood, this idiot police officer, Officer Fox, saw George and decided it looked like he was making a drug deal. Fox said Robinson did not comply with his orders to exit the car and seemed to be trying to hide something. Witnesses said they heard George say he just had a stroke and was struggling to get out of his car. A brief struggle followed in which Officer Fox, with the help from two other officers, slammed Robinson to the ground. An ambulance arrived and an EMT bandaged a cut on George's head. George refused further treatment. No drugs were found, but George was given a citation alleging failure to obey and resisting arrest. He was allowed to leave, though.
That seems like just making a bad situation worse, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. And like, as somebody who had somebody has somebody in their family who has had a stroke, it is not easy to get around after that. Later that night, George's girlfriend found him in bed, unconscious and foaming at the mouth. He was taken to the hospital where he died 2 days later. An autopsy determined that George died of a subdural hematoma, or bleeding around the brain, caused by, quote, multiple blunt head injuries, unquote, and labeled his death a homicide, meaning that it was the result of action by another person. Three officers were investigated. Two of these officers got off, but Officer Fox was convicted of culpable negligent manslaughter and sentenced to 5 years in prison. It gets worse. Officer Fox was convicted by a jury, unanimously by a jury, in 2022. But just this January, the Mississippi Court of Appeals reversed his conviction, stating, quote, they reviewed the case and found that the evidence was insufficient to support the verdict, unquote. Even before his appeal went through, even before his conviction was overturned, on February 6, 2023, while he's still serving time, the city of Clinton's Board of Aldermen approved Police Chief Ford Heyman's request to rehire Fox. And when his conviction was overturned, he returned to work as a canine narcotics detective.
Totally not suspicious at all.
After murdering a man. And I can call it murder. He died by homicide. The city council did unanimously vote on a settlement for the Wade family of $17,000. Okay.
Is that even enough to cover anything?
Uh-uh. No.
Let alone the cost of a person's life?
No. And the thing for me is like, it's like what the person in your case said was there monetary, there is no monetary amount that would ever make up for me losing somebody in my life. You can't put a price on that. The only reason a lot of these cases go to civil court is not for a payout. It is so that other evidence can come to light so a criminal case can be brought against these people.
Or it's a way to hold them accountable because they know that even if they're found guilty, they're not going to serve the amount of time that they certainly should. So the idea is maybe if we hurt their pocketbooks, they'll actually enforce some kind of change so this doesn't happen. And unfortunately, it still doesn't work.
$17,000 is not hurting anybody's pocketbook.
The thing that pisses me off is that in no other line of work would something like this be allowed. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like if a doctor killed a patient negligently, they wouldn't be a doctor anymore. If a teacher hurt a child, they wouldn't be allowed to be a teacher anymore. But it's okay if a police officer kills someone, like not in self-defense. There's no good reason for it. Not that there ever is, but you know what I'm trying to say. But they can still be a police officer.
As they're serving time. Yes.
That is so fucked up.
But it's also part of their job, right? Their job is to determine in that situation whether their response is warranted for the situation. So you, that's your job. You're found negligent. You're found that you didn't do your job, but we'll rehire you for the exact same thing. Even though you've proven that you couldn't do your job, we're going to rehire you. And it'll be all right. You probably learned your lesson. That in and of itself is absolutely ridiculous. Forget the fact that if you have been convicted of a crime, anything close to this, you would not be allowed to work at Publix if you were a normal citizen, let alone be a police officer.
Yeah.
Like, are you shitting me right now? Like, you were held accountable for your actions. So now for arguably the worst kind, and it not really held accountable in the way that you should have been, because this should have been much harsher than it was, but you got the bare minimum. You're serving time. We're not going to make you pull. You don't have to do the whole time, but we're going to put you right back in that same spot because what, to give you an opportunity to do better? Because that's not how this works typically when they don't even have to serve their full sentence. How many times do we have to have people sent to jail, not serve their full sentence, let them out, then give them the opportunity to do the exact same thing over again and see how it goes? Like, I feel like that's how we do sometimes. And that's, it never works out. It really doesn't.
No,
I don't get it.
They promote them and move them to a new location. Nobody is held responsible. There's no consequences for taking a person's life. And that's the outside of a serial killer who never gets caught. That's about the only way you get away with it, I guess. I don't know.
I wonder if that's why serial killers frequently wanted to be in law enforcement.
Oh, shocking. We made a connection there. I bet we're the first ones to do that. Oh, God. Anyway, none of this is funny. I'm just mad. So, yeah, there's that. So the whole time this is going on with her brother. So shortly after Officer Fox's conviction is overturned, but I believe it was still while they were in a civil suit against the city that ended up, you know, giving them the $17,000. That's when, right around that time period, is when Dexter went missing. The two don't really have anything to do with each other. Do with whatever you want to with that information. So, with all that known, it makes sense that Betterston wouldn't want to call the police on her previously convicted, mentally unwell black son. But eventually she broke down and filed a missing persons report with Jackson Police on March 14th. An investigator came to Betterston's house and took a statement. She emailed the investigator a picture of Dexter. He left a card with a case number on it, and 2 days later, she emailed a different investigator another photo of her son. The original investigator filed an incident report that misspelled Dexter's name as Dester, D-E-S-T-E-R. Betterston said she kept in regular touch with the police, asking for updates and requesting that they put his picture on TV. She did her own search, checking out abandoned homes and driving around her neighborhood, asking if anyone had seen him. She also tried to find the friend that he left the house with, but she was never able to find that person. Dexter's now teenage daughters and their mother grew frantic, calling Betterston for news. Quote, "The girls would ask, 'Did you hear from my daddy?' We just kept praying he was all right." Carrie Banks, a close friend of Betterson's, accompanied her on searches of the neighborhood and watched as stress and desperation wore on her. Quote, "She called someone every week and asked about her child," Banks said. "She couldn't get it off her mind. She was crazy about that boy." Each time she called, police told her they had no information. The problem with this is that the police knew exactly where Dexter was the whole time. You see, within an hour of Dexter leaving his mother's home on March 5th, 2023, Dexter Wade was killed. He was struck and killed by an SUV while crossing an intersection. The driver of the SUV was an off-duty police officer. When he was killed, Dexter had a prescription bottle with his information on it, along with a state ID, and he had multiple cards on it that had his name. And not only that, but he had been arrested previously, so his fingerprints were on file. So why didn't Jackson police inform his mother for over 170 days? She was also calling constantly. They had a missing persons report on file for him. She was well known to the Jackson police because of her brother's death. Quote, officials in Jackson, a city of 150,000, have described Mr. Wade's burial and long delay in informing his mother of his death as regrettable, but an honest mistake, a matter of miscommunication within an overburdened police department, unquote. And you're probably thinking, burial? What? Yeah, instead of informing his mother of his death, instead of trying to find her, instead of putting two and two together or simply knowing and hiding it, they buried Dexter Wade in a pauper's grave behind the jail and marked the site with a rod and a plate that numbered it 672. Betterson was informed of her son's death and his burial in August. They informed her she would have to pay $250 to retrieve her son's body.
Oh, are you freaking kidding me right now? Because you messed up. You failed to tell me. You made all these mistakes. You dragged me along, even though I was desperately trying to find him and you knew. You're now going to charge me to get my son's remains that I have been desperately looking for, that you knew where they were all along?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She told them that she would pay, but was stumped as to why they waited almost 200 days to inform her. A letter from the county's lawyer confirmed that Mr. Wade's body would be exhumed on November 13th at 11:30 a.m. Quote, it is the procedure of the coroner to exhume the body from the burial site in the presence of representatives of the Hinds County Sheriff's Department, coroner's office, and the funeral home that will receive the body. Instead, when Miss Wade and employees of the funeral home showed up on Monday morning, his remains had been dug up hours earlier by unsupervised public works crew. This was a crushing blow for Betterson. The family's lawyer said a chain of custody had been broken, denying them a chance to know how the remains had been handled. Quote, we don't know whether he was in a box, whether he was in a bag, what exact condition he was in, said Dennis C. Sweet, one of the lawyers. Quote, I don't matter, Betterson said. It doesn't matter what I think and what I feel. Nothing matters. Dexter's body had not been embalmed according to preliminary findings of independent autopsies. It showed blunt force injuries to his skull, ribs, and pelvis, and his left leg was severed. His wallet was in his front pocket. It had his credit card, his health insurance card, and his state identification card, which listed the address where he lived with his mother. So how can this happen? It doesn't make sense that they couldn't figure out how to inform his mother of his death. Well, according to them, they did try to contact her. Coroner's records show that at about 8 p.m. on March 5th, Dexter Wade was hit while apparently trying to cross the southbound lanes of Interstate 55, southwest of downtown Jackson. Officials said the driver was an off-duty police officer in a department vehicle. His death was ruled accidental by the Hinds County coroner. A toxicology screening found it's PCP and methamphetamine in his system, which doesn't matter, first off. The coroner's office called Hinds Behavioral Health Services, which had prescribed the medication he was carrying. The clinic confirmed that Mr. Wade was a patient and provided the coroner's office with his mother's name and phone number, according to notes attached to his death certificate. A deputy coroner tried the phone number, records showed, but there was no answer. Miss Wade said she did not receive a call. Then the information was given to the police to try and reach Betterson. The deputy coroner checked in with the police several times over the next few months to ask if anyone planned to claim the body. and there were no updates, according to the notes in the coroner's records. On July 14th, Mr. Wade was buried at the Hinds County Penal Farm. And I also want to point out that the off-duty police officer, who has not been named, he was found to be not under the influence of anything, but then they also stated that he did not get a field sobriety test. Which seems like not how you do it, especially if you're in a city vehicle when you hit somebody, that there should be a lot more going on there. But
I mean, they haven't followed a single protocol, I feel like, in this entire situation. So the fact that that one wasn't followed isn't super surprising.
It gets worse.
Oh, I figured.
But what makes no sense to me is Betterston is well known in this city, like I said. She was at the time involved in an active civil case against the police department for the death of her brother. Dexter was known as well since he'd previously been convicted and done prison time. So I'm just like, I'm not buying it. The timing is also a bit iffy for me. The appeals in the civil case were coming close to an end for George's death, and right around that time, an officer also kills, by accident, Betterston's son. To me, and this is complete speculation and solely my opinion based on the evidence that we've talked about, it seems to me that police just didn't want another family member in this family to be in the news that they were killed by a police officer while they're trying to settle a previous case of killing someone in that family. It could have been an accident. We'll never
know. Doesn't matter.
But it doesn't matter. It seems to me that this was done on purpose, because it would not look good if they are trying to settle a case about another death related to this family by another police officer. But we're not done. No. This is where you might have heard of this case before. Dexter Wade wasn't the only person buried in that pauper's field. He wasn't the only person whose family had been searching for their loved ones for months. Because of Betterson's persistence, the news of her son being found spurred others to search out their loved ones there. 215 bodies were discovered to be buried in the pauper's field, marked only by metal rods and a number plate, the families of which were never informed of their loved ones' deaths. The bodies were buried without embalming, without coffins, without any proper burial procedures. Since this was unearthed, several more families have come forward with their own stories. Marquetta Moore was notified of the death of her older brother, Mario Terrell Moore, 40, from an online article revealing cases of 24 homicide victims in which Jackson police have failed to notify the public or their families. Moore's brother was the second on the list. On December 4th, the family of Jonathan David Hankins, 39, learned of his death from a news outlet. Hankins was first reported missing in June 2022, nearly a year before the first two cases, suggesting that the practice of burying victims in the pauper's field has been going on for years. But fret not, because the mayor has spoken up. Jackson Mayor Chakwe A. Lumumba, I think that's right, warned about the harmful rumors spreading through social media at a community meeting. Quote, "They created this narrative. They called it a secret grave that's supposedly behind apparently the secret jail in Jackson. A pauper's field isn't only found in Hinds County. It's in every country in the United States of America," he said. "It's important that we own our own narrative and don't allow anybody to create a narrative for us." Which, to that, I have to say, yes, there are pauper's fields in every county in the United States. That doesn't make it better. And they're not claiming that there isn't pauper's fields in other counties. They're saying you failed to inform hundreds of families of their loved ones' deaths. And that's odd behavior.
At best.
You can't gaslight your way out of this situation. Oh, it's a normal thing. It's not normal to not notify the families.
No, especially when these are families that were looking for their loved ones and they just weren't told what happened to them. That's suspect at best.
At best. And you have an officer-involved death and you hide that one? How many others? How many others are officer-involved deaths? Let us see. Show me the money.
They never will.
No, they won't. Deny, deny, deny. And when deny doesn't work, deflect.
Yeah. Well, people will eventually, they have small attention spans. They have small attention spans. Yeah, but we're also all really poor and tired and stressed out and we're pissed off. And we're going to be pissed off at you.
Boy, if we end up releasing this episode right after the one we just released.
I know. So where is this whole thing now? Well, nationally renowned civil rights and personal injury attorney Ben Crump has been retained by Betterston. Attorney Crump has released the following statement, quote, Dexter's story is a living nightmare for any mother. The secrecy surrounding his death, the alleged concealment of vital information, and the callous burial in a pauper's field without his mother's knowledge are not just oversights. They are a grave miscarriage of justice. The fact that Dexter's tragic end involved an off-duty police officer only deepens the wounds of this community and raises troubling questions about the integrity of those entrusted with upholding the law, unquote. So there are movements to bring a case against the Jackson police and the city for these three different cases that I talked about in that. I don't know where it's at, but there is like just say if you look at like the news talking about this, there was an uptick right as it came to light. And then there's just a cutoff in February where they stopped talking about it altogether, which is weird. Maybe it's going through now and we just don't know, but I'm going to keep my eye on it because this isn't something that should be just brushed under the rug. And to clarify, 215 bodies were found in that pauper's field that had family who had not been notified, but there's well over that many who are buried out there. There are more. And they're just a line and a 12-page stack of names of people who were buried back there. And it's fine. You can put the name down, but if you're not, especially if you're not putting names correctly on incident reports, you're still not doing enough to contact their family. Sorry, not sorry. So that's it. That's where we're at. Good job.
I mean, I just don't really have anything to add because I can't. The lack of accountability. I think the only thing I would say at this point is, I'm glad that we have the ability with social media. That's one of the few things that I would say that's a positive aspect. You can't hide things like you used to be able to. People mm-hmm. are going to speak out. They're going to comment. They're going to publish. They're going to show things. And they don't have to care about what you think or whether you're telling them to be quiet. And sometimes that means misinformation does get shared, but sometimes things are brought to light that otherwise would have been swept under the rug and nobody would have known that this stuff was going on. Mm-hmm. So I do think accountability from our enforcement officers is being required by a lot of people, and more people are starting to see the truth of these issues and starting to try to be a better support for seeing these things as they are. And requiring change. So I can only hope that it gets better as these things come to light and that they're not able to hide it.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I hope that Betterston and his two girls can somehow find peace and get some kind of resolution in this, because these were two really gross miscarriages in law enforcement cases. And it's very disheartening. I'm going to go throw up now.
It is disheartening, but I'm glad that we can talk about it because I feel like we wouldn't, like I said, we wouldn't be aware of these cases if we weren't in today's day and age. So I'm glad these things are being brought to light so that they can get the justice, hopefully, that they deserve.
Yeah, I agree. And I will say, having thinking about it, and when I brought up like media literacy and things like that, doing this podcast has really helped me understand aspects that I didn't fully understand when I was consuming true crime media. And it's made me a better person in terms of like understanding a situation, not just from a headline or a small article piece, but a fuller picture. Because when I don't know about you, but when I go, and I'm sure you do it too, but when I go to research something, I don't just look at like the news articles. I'm directly also looking for anything that's quoted by the family that talks directly about their family member. Anything that I can get from the family, I'm going to take as sworn testimony over anything a news article says any day of the week. It makes me think about these situations more critically and in a more informed perspective. So
yeah, and I mean that it's that, and then it's also, I mean, even published materials like books, you know, there's a lot of opinions in some of those, like we've talked about before, in some of the cases that you've covered where it was leading you down a very specific pathway, and by the time you get to the end of the book, you can kind of see the direct pathway it wanted you to take, and then you can research it yourself and then determine for yourself, well, was that the correct pathway or are there other options here? And I feel like that's how news articles are. You could read from one place and it's going to be very obvious it's one thing, and then go to a different place or a blog where the people have spoken with the family members and you hear a completely different point of view.
Yeah, side to it.
And I don't just look at the first page of Google. I go all the way to the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th. And sometimes I will find something that is just mind blowing that it's not a primary page, but because it's just not published or talked about as much, it was harder to find.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, yeah, I mean, especially doing the research, it can be really hard to see and find more than one point of view in some of these cases. So you really have to really struggle to try to find something else or look at Facebook, unfortunately.
I try to stay away from the
place that you find it.
But I say all that because I believe like early on, we wouldn't have covered something like this. In my case, I've always been critical of like law enforcement in general, but I didn't like to speak on it as much. But I feel a lot more comfortable seeing over and over and over and over again when we research these cases, the failure and the outright violence handed out by law enforcement. I think it's about time we are a little bit more critical of law enforcement openly, vocally.
Our expectations should be high for them. That's not a critical thing. That's their job. They should be held to a higher standard. That's what they signed up for, and that's what my expectation is. And when you don't meet that expectation, there should be consequences. It's that easy. It really shouldn't be this complicated of a topic to discuss.
No, it shouldn't.
Do your job the way you're supposed to.
No career should give you a free pass to just be violent and murder people. Anyways, that was great. This is going to be long enough for Kelsey.
Yeah. Sorry, Kelsey.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I want to put in my two cents real quick. This made me angry.
Yeah.
This one, I'm pissed. Like, and I know that things like this happen all the time, every day. And that's what pisses me off more. And, you know, I'm grateful to be a part of this podcast and the small part that I play. Because, yeah, like these things need to be told. And I did hear about that, the whole uncovering of at the tail end of yours, Montana. It's hard to talk about, you know, police brutality because it is such a controversial topic. It's heartbreaking because these are professions that used to be, you know, yearned for. People would, you know, would really love to be police officers and firefighters and, you know, public servants of some kind. And it's just heartbreaking that because they just get away with anything, and it's just bullshit.
Literal murder.
Like, literal murder. Yeah. Like, and I don't know. It just makes me angry. Like this, it's hard.
Yeah. Eloquently, but no. But it is. It is hard. I see what you're saying. I do know that as we are more informed and we have more access to more information through social media and things like that, and we're all getting to see these things firsthand, it's not surprising that people don't want to encourage their children to be police officers. Because at the end of the day, we talk about police officers are servants to our community and things like that. But the reality is they're not. They're not. As they stand today, they are not.
They're supposed to be.
They're supposed to be, but they are not. And they can be very harmful to your community a lot of the time. So keep that in mind before you come spouting off in my emails. Okay.
It's heartbreaking that that has to be the reality, but that's it. So that's all I wanted to share.
And just like in any other situation, these bad nuts that are in the mix are what makes it hard for those that are doing the job and go into the job with the best of intentions to be able to do their job to the best of their ability, because they're surrounded by this type of mentality.
Corruption.
And they have to fight that. And then a lot of them probably don't make it and stay in it. It's kind of along the lines of social workers, same thing. Like it becomes so defeating to be in that environment that the ones that do genuinely go into that role for the right reasons probably don't stay very long because they can't.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, I agree. Or the ones that are trying to do a good job get corrupted by the corrupted. And they just, you know, go along with it. Anyways, great, terrible episode. Hope everybody listening to this has a better weekend than we just had doing this. Oh, man.
Take a shot.
Yeah, take a shot. Stay critical of law enforcement. Hold them responsible. Until next time, we love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye.
The Reaper will come for us all.